From the Lupus Foundation of America National Office in Washington, D.C., this is another in a series of audio podcasts about living with lupus. In this podcast, we speak with Cindy Coney, a nationally recognized speaker and trainer, and author of The Wild Woman's Guide to Living with Chronic Illness. Cindy was diagnosed with lupus in 1980. Listen as Cindy offers her advice about living with lupus in this interview with Sarah Garfinkel of the Lupus Foundation of America.
Well, Cindy, thank you so much for joining us today. If you can just tell me a little bit about yourself and your experience with the Lupus Foundation of America to start off with.
I've been involved with the Lupus Foundation of America for 15 years or so. I served on the National Board of Directors for over 10 years and was the board chair for the last two of those years. So have always supported the work of the foundation and honestly am truly amazed at all that's done on behalf of all of us who live with this disease.
So Cindy, as an author of The Wild Woman's Guide to Living with Chronic Illness and a lupus activist and a former chair of the Lupus Foundation of America's Board of Directors, can you just tell us a little bit about what advice you have for someone who's recently diagnosed with this disease since you've been living with it for so long now? What can someone who's just been diagnosed do to help themselves?
Sarah, this is one of the things that I talk about a lot when I speak, because initially I really believe when someone is newly diagnosed or searching for the diagnosis, that's probably the most difficult time. It's a time when you're transitioning from this, as I call it, plan A life that we envisioned. For me, it was being athletic and married and a house full of children, to really settling into what it might be like to live day in and day out with a disease like lupus, which I call my plan B life. And it takes a while to make that transition. And it's hard because I see a lot of times people will kind of go through the stages of grief, you know, just not really knowing what to expect, where when you get a little bit further down the road and you have a relationship with a healthcare provider that you trust, and you kind of learn yourself what it's like to live with lupus, I think at that point it becomes a little bit easier. There's an acceptance of living with the disease instead of fighting it. I know I was 25 years old and I was always like, oh, I can stay up as late as I want. I can still run. I can still do all of these things. Well, I could, but then I didn't feel well. And then I was so sick. So there's that period of adjustment and acceptance of learning to live with it.
So would you say one of the big things that someone can do is just to be patient with themselves and you know, let their body adapt and learn what their body needs?
Oh, absolutely. It is a huge period of learning and really becoming aware of what are the symptoms, what are the things that cause me trouble, what triggers it for me, and really lining up healthcare providers, because it becomes a long-term relationship. It's not like someone you'll go to one time for something. This becomes a relationship with your healthcare providers, with your doctors, your nurses, and everyone that can last a lifetime. So it's kind of learning to deal with all of those things. And also, it's usually a tremendous adjustment for the people around you. I know I went from running 9 miles a day to barely being able to walk to the mailbox. I mean, that was a tremendous adjustment for my husband and my parents.
What are some of the examples of stressors that can trigger flares or can make the disease even harder to deal with? Are there certain situations that you get frustrated with or other examples of stress?
Yeah, you know what I've learned over the years, that there are really two triggers. Some of those are physical. Those are the things like rest, and for some people being out in the sun or exercising enough or not enough. They're the physical stressors on our body. But the ones that I find that are so hard to deal with are the ones that are mental. And for me, it's always been about relationship issues or issues with my family. You know, if my kids are okay, if my husband's okay, I'm much better than when one of those people in my family is having a hard time. I find it's people I care about. I find those incredibly difficult. And every everyone's stressors will be different. That's kind of the way stress works. And I think part of it is learning yourself. What are your personal triggers for stress? I think that's part of the learning process that goes on.
And since those are, you know, primarily mental stressors, you know, with physical ones, you can rest, you can force yourself to just slow down. But with the mental ones, have you found any tools or tricks that help you deal with that just personally?
Oh, I have. And I do a lot of speaking on stress, so I've studied it a lot over the years as well. And one thing that is huge is to really look at things and decide, is it something you have control over? If it's something you have control over, then take action. If it's not something you have control over, which a lot of times is other people and other people's behavior, we have to learn to let that go. I have this little T-square in my head and I go, okay, is this something I have control over? I have the ability to change or not, and then try to let that go. One of the other things I've learned is to stay in the present, because there can be, with this disease, a lot of fear about the future. The what if? What if this happens? What if I don't live to see my child get married? What if I this? What if I that? And I've learned to stop that with myself and to just be present in the moment. And the way that is helpful for a lot of people is to really monitor your self-talk, to notice, are those the things you're saying to yourself? Am I starting to do the what ifs and start to worry about and be afraid of what might happen in the future? And when that happens, to remind myself, I'll say, Cindy, not helpful. Cindy, not helpful. And try to bring myself back to the present. And sometimes it's as easy as breathing, to just focus on your breath. And I'll inhale to the count of four and exhale to the count of four. Just by simply doing that, it brings you back to the present. And I'm working on meditating. I'm not great at it because I've never been really still. But when I'm able to calm my mind, I do find that that helps me to better deal with stress.
That's all great advice. And just specifically, you know, for a lot of people with lupus and just people in general, I know I have trouble with this sometimes, going to the doctor can be so stressful. And do you have any tips how people can better prepare themselves for a visit to the doctor to mitigate some of that stress?
It is stressful. And every time, I'll tell you, with lupus, we get a pretty long history pretty quickly. And so I know I even find myself, especially if I'm going to see a new doctor, that I get kind of anxious about having to go through my story again, having to go through all the things that have happened and to go through all of that. But I find that it helps to write things down. And I'm not the least bit embarrassed to pull out a piece of paper. And the other thing I see is that sometimes we don't see the doctor for a month, 2 months, 3 months. And I would find that I was going to the visit and only talking about the things that happened the week before, you know, because those were the things that were on my mind. So sometimes I have a little notebook and I'll just jot down some things during the month that I want to remember to ask about. And the other thing that is helpful is if there is a supportive person that can go with you. And can you even make it fun? You know, can you go to lunch or can you go to your doctor's visit together and then go out to dinner or go somewhere and do something so that there's something else to look forward to? And I've noticed that people hear things differently. And when I get news sometimes that's very shocking or not what I was expecting, I don't hear the rest of the conversation very well. So I've learned that it really helps to have someone else in the room there to help calm me down and also to really focus and hear what the doctor has to say. And it's real important who you would choose to do that with. You know, it's someone you have to be very comfortable with and someone that's very supportive of you and the disease that you have.
Do you have specific questions that you always make sure to ask the doctor, or when you're seeing a new doctor, do you have like these specific questions that you write down to make sure you ask?
One of the things that I always try to do and to remind myself is to just be completely honest with my concerns. Sometimes something will happen and we're like, oh, we're a little embarrassed to share it. Maybe it's personal. Maybe we think it's trivial and we're a little embarrassed to share it. So the first thing is to be honest. And the other thing is with medications, because a lot of times medications are changing for those of us with lupus, either the amounts or the medication itself or something new is being tried. So I always try to remember to ask about the side effects, to ask the doctor when I might expect to see improvement. When do we think I would improve from this? And what should prompt a call back to him or her? You know, when should I call back if this happens or if I don't see it working over this period of time? Because sometimes we're just waiting and we don't quite know what we're waiting for to happen. And so I found that those questions about medication help quite a bit.
And just switching gears a little, I know that a lot of people with lupus deal with fatigue and extreme fatigue. So how do you explain that to other people who think you're just tired all the time?
This is the one thing I hear from patients more than anything else. It's so hard for people to understand the fatigue. When we say fatigue, if you're a healthy individual, you're thinking of fatigue in the framework of, gosh, I stayed up too late last night and now today I'm tired. But you push through. And that's very different from those of us who suffer from lupus. And one of the things I'll always ask people, I'll say, have you ever had the flu? You know, that aching, bone-tired feeling, and you're thinking, gosh, I should go to work today, but you just can't. You can't get out of bed and do it. That's the way the lupus fatigue feels. It's really so often just an issue of not being able to carry on. Sometimes the disease isn't flaring, and sometimes it'll be not quite as bad, and I can push through some of it. Sometimes that's a really bad idea. I've learned that as well, because a lot of us, we want to be healthy, and we want to do the things we could do when we were healthy. So we'll say, well, I'm not going to let this get me down, and we'll push through. Well, then the next day, we literally cannot get out of bed. And there's just this feeling of not being able to do anything.
And I think that flu analogy is really helpful to help someone who doesn't have the disease or doesn't interact with people who have the disease understand just kind of in comparison something that is in their frame of reference. And so how do you deal with that kind of fatigue? Because when you have the flu, you know, you get better the next day or two and you drink some soup, you have some soup, you drink some orange juice and you kind of recuperate. So when you have lupus, how do you manage that fatigue?
The first thing is, and I do laugh about this, I mean, but I need 9 or 10 hours of sleep a night. Those of us with lupus need a lot more rest because it takes our bodies, you know, they're healing. There's inflammation and it makes us very tired. So I try very hard to sleep 9 hours a night. I go to bed at 10 and I get up at 7. And there are days when I'm so tired and I laugh. I have to tell you, I told my husband that my pajamas are my BFFs, my best friends forever. And so I'll go, I'm going upstairs to put on the BFFs because I am tired by the end of the day. And so I'm ready. I get in bed most nights at 9 and I'm asleep by 10. And I try to stick to that routine because I find that I feel better. I also, and this seems counterintuitive, but find that exercise helps. I walk every day, or I try to walk every day. If I'm really sick, I can't. Some days it's a longer walk, and some days it's a walk around the block with my dog. But I do find that if I'm able to exercise and build it up a little bit, that I do feel better. I also give myself permission, and I think that's huge. I think that's what happens to so many of us, is that we're waiting for somebody else to tell us that it's okay to go to bed earlier. It's okay to stop and take a nap. Where at this point, because I have lived with the disease for over 30 years, I do give myself permission to rest. And one of the things that's really hard for me is doing things in the evening, you know, whether it's a party or a meeting or whatever it might be that's happening at night. I try very hard not to do more than one of those a week if I have them. And I especially try not to back them up back to back, like to go out two nights in a row, because then by the third day, I'm really tired. And I've just kind of learned that that's one of the things for me that's really tired and one of the ways that I can deal with some of the fatigue.
Are there other activities that you can't do or have to limit yourself from, you know, from the life that you said that you envisioned, you know, being athletic and running every day? And how do you cope with not being able to do some of those things that you envisioned for yourself?
That was really hard for me. It's still hard for me because I have so many joint issues, and my joints have always been one of my big issues. I've had neck surgery, real serious neck surgery, back surgery, foot surgery, and all of those things are incredibly limiting, you know, that I really can't move around much at all sometimes after those. And I've had to, I know, especially when I was having surgery on some of the joints in my feet, it was really hard because I knew I couldn't get around very easily. And so I had to, I will never forget, I was at home one day and I was in bed, you know, propped up and all this stuff. And I looked at my husband, I go, "You need to go to the craft store and get me some yarn and some knitting needles." And he's looking at me like, "Are you crazy?" He goes, "What?" I go, "I don't care what color it is. I don't care what size the needles are. I don't care anything. Please go and get them. Bring them home." And I sat on the bed with ice on my foot, all this stuff, and my iPad, taught myself to knit because I just had to move. I simply had to find something to distract myself. And that's the biggest thing for me. I cannot allow myself to sit and focus on poor me. I can't do it, Sarah. And I have to say to myself, Cindy, stop. Because I will get depressed, and so will a lot of people with lupus, if we allow it to get us down. I know, you know, there are other reasons for depression, but I do believe that one of those is that the disease, when it starts pulling us down, I've learned to recognize that and find other things to focus on so that I can get myself out of that situation, because it's really hard. It's easy to sink into, I can't do the things I used to be able to do. And for me, there are a lot of them. I mean, I was really athletic. I mean, like intramurals and running. And I mean, I'm the person whose mother, when I was in high school, told me, "Don't beat the boys in sports. You'll never get a husband." That's probably, for me, one of the hardest parts of living with the disease. And I have to focus on the things I can do, not the things I can't do. And now I walk, and, you know, sometimes I'll just kind of paddle around in a pool or something to be able to just move and to, you know, feel like I'm doing something. I do yoga. Like I said, I'm learning to meditate, which isn't movement, but kind of quiets my brain. So those are some of the things, because it is hard. That is probably one of the biggest adjustments, is the learning that many of the things we couldn't do in that Plan A life, you know, the things that we could do, excuse me, we may not be able to do in our Plan B life, and making those adjustments. But I'll tell you this. The biggest learning for me is that I found I really like feeling good, really, really like feeling good. So at this point, I'm willing to do whatever I can do to make that happen. And it was funny, I got an infusion not too long ago, and I had not been feeling well. And I saw someone a month or so later, and they're like, "Sydney, I can tell you're feeling good again. You sparkle." And I'm like, "I like my sparkle." So I'm willing to work pretty hard to get there, you know, and to give up some of the other things along the way and to replace them with things I can do. You know, knitting was a great afternoon activity that day. No one is getting Christmas gifts from me that are knitted, but it kept my mind off of it and kept me busy for an afternoon.
So many of the people who contact us or talk to our health educators talk about feeling guilty, asking for help or talking to the people around them. You know, like you turned to your husband and said, you know, get me the knitting needles, get me the yarn. But, you know, a lot of people feel guilty asking for help or feel like a burden. You know, what's your advice to people who might feel that way?
We do feel guilty because we may not sometimes be able to hold the job that we had before and to bring the income into the family, to attend our children's sporting events. I mean, there are things that for me, especially as a mom, it's really hard. And I do feel guilty. But like I just said, what I want to be able to do is to bring the best Cindy I can be, to being a mom, to being a wife, to being out in the world. That's, I don't know if you fly a lot or if people listening to this travel very much, but I know when you're sitting on the airplane, you know, in those oxygen things, they tell you, should these drop down out of the ceiling? I'm thinking, oh gosh, I'll have a heart attack if those things drop down out of the ceiling. But what do they tell you? They tell you to put your mask on first, because when you put your mask on first, then you're better able to help those around you. And that's a really hard lesson and a real shift in thinking for me that I had to get used to, that I want to bring the best I can be, that it's worth taking a nap one day, one Saturday afternoon, to skip the sporting event or to, you know, to miss the family event and taking care of myself so that then perhaps the next day I will be healthier and better able to participate. But it's really hard. Guilt is one that's really hard to deal with, but it is just a real commitment to, I'm going to take the best care of myself, and not in a selfish way, but so that I can be better in all of those relationships.
And along those lines, you know, maintaining relationships can be so hard for people with chronic illness and lupus. Do you have any advice for people who just need to explain to someone else that, you know, they really do need to take care of themselves, and, you know, it's not all in their head, and this lupus thing is real and needs to be, you know, means that they need to take a little bit extra time to do a lot of things in their life. You know, how do you maintain those relationships with people who just might not get it?
You know, it's really hard, and because for many of us, this disease is invisible. People, you cannot see it. It's not like in some of the cancer patients who you will see. Sometimes it happens, but that you'll see where the hair has fallen out. But if there's an outward sign that you know something is going on. With many of us with lupus, that's not the case. And I think that's a double-edged sword. It's nice sometimes not to be looked at and thought of as being ill, but the flip side of that is it makes it even harder for someone to understand. And I think it's an educational process. I think this is a lot of the work that LFA is doing in education, is making people aware of the disease and talking about it. When people call me all the time who have been newly diagnosed, and we'll talk about it, and they'll always ask about sharing with others. And I say, you know, the more people you tell and explain what's going on, the more it becomes recognized and accepted, because it's really sad. Like this afternoon, I have a very dear friend, and she's been diagnosed with cancer, and I'm taking them dinner. I don't always see that happen with people with lupus. You know, they may not get that same type of support, number one, because I don't think people understand the disease that well. Just like when you and I were talking about the fatigue, it's one thing for someone to think we're tired and not doing it versus the extreme fatigue that we really have. And it is an incredibly difficult disease to understand. It's hard for me sometimes to understand, and I've lived with it for 30 years. It's like, how could I have felt okay this morning and be not feeling well by this afternoon? And that happens. That happens a lot. So you can imagine if it's difficult for those of us living with it, it's incredibly difficult for those around us to understand. And it's when I speak to people with lupus and those who love them, I always tell them two things. I go, here's what you need to do. Just listen. Don't try to fix it. Sometimes we just need to talk about and love us even when we feel unlovable, because we don't like it either. But it is, and I know all types of illnesses, the statistics show that it's very hard for someone to live with a spouse or a friend who is sick. And I think sometimes the group of people around us can become much smaller as we find those who do understand, those who support us regardless of what's going on, and those who are willing to be educated and make the effort to learn about the disease, because it is challenging. It is, like I said, it's incredibly challenging, and it's incredibly hard for those around us. And I know that. I'm very fortunate. I will tell you, I was recently in a room with a number of people with lupus, and many of them were divorced. And I know that happens because there are some people who can't accept, for example, in my case, that I wasn't the competitive athletic person they married. I was fortunate. My husband is accepting of it and is very supportive. But I know that I'm very, very lucky in that case. And I try to show him how appreciative I am when I am feeling good. But we had to learn. We went to counseling. We had to learn to work through it because he wanted to fix it. He's a man, and I laugh about that with men sometimes. They just want to fix it and move on. And with chronic illness, you can't do that. Unfortunately, I wish I had a magic wand and could make the whole disease go away, but we can't. And for us, it was, I told him, I said, you have to tell me when you're afraid sometimes too, because he was holding it all in, because he was afraid it would cause me stress, that it would cause me more stress. So we learned to really open those lines of communication, and it happened with trial and error. We were not always good at it, but we made a commitment to hang in and try.
Well, Cindy, I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to us today and to share all of your insights from living with this disease for so long. And if there's one thing that you can leave us with for everyone with lupus or their loved ones to remember, you know, what would that be?
You know, if I had to come up with one word, Sarah, I think it would be listen. I think it would be for those of us living with the disease to listen to our bodies, listen to those messages that we're saying to ourselves. What are we saying over and over again? And for those who are supporting and loving those with us with the disease, sometimes to just listen, because they can't make it go away, and there's nothing that I appreciate more than someone just letting me talk honestly about it, you know, and about my feelings. So I think that word would be listen for me.
That's great advice for everyone with a disease and someone who knows someone with the disease. And again, thank you so much for joining us today, and we appreciate all of your insights.
It's been wonderful, Sarah. I've enjoyed it. And I'll leave you with my one message. What I always like to tell people is, Cindy has lupus. Lupus doesn't have Cindy. So that's my closing message for today. And you at LFA keep doing the great work you're doing as well. Thank you.
This podcast has been produced by the Lupus Foundation of America National Office in Washington, D.C. For more information about lupus, visit the Lupus Foundation of America's website at lupus.org.